real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
So glad to have you tuned in to Connecting Faith today. I'm Neil Staben along with Ted Ross and want to wish you a happy 4th of July on the 3rd of July.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We're early. We're beating everybody up.
Sure. Well, and you may have the day off, and I hope that you have a wonderful extended holiday weekend. I want to remind you that coming up next Sunday is Pray Together Sunday.
An exciting time for churches to come together with other churches around the country and maybe even some around the world, where we're praying together, committing a time in your church during worship on July 9th.
We've got information on our website about it, and you can also sign up for an email series that we're going to do following that week, the week following, praying together for our nation in a variety of ways. So check that out, myfaithradio.com. Ted, I say you're looking strong and fit, manly today.
That's right. I'm ready to light up some fireworks, I think.
All right. We're gonna learn about playing the man today. Speaking of prayer, we think about Mark Batterson talking the prayer, circle maker, you know, and he has so many good things to say. Well, Mark's written a new book, and we're going to talk about what it means to be a man of God in the moments ahead.
And Mark speaking to us today from Washington, D.C. with the 4th of July. That seems to fit well. This will be great.
We're looking forward to talking about becoming the man God created you to be. That's the subtitle of Mark Batterson's latest book called Play the Man. And Mark has been a guest on Connecting Faith and on Faith Radio times past. We just so appreciate him and his writing. He's a New York Times bestselling author of books like The Circle Maker and The Grave Robber and A Trip Around the Sun and If. He's lead pastor of National Community Church. It's one church with 8 campuses in Washington, D.C. And the new book is going to encourage and challenge us, I think. And so we're really looking forward to the conversation. Mark, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Good to talk with you.
Hey, thanks so much, Neil. It's great to be back.
So the title's pretty intriguing, Play the Man. Let's start with that. What's the story behind the title?
Yeah, it's an incredible story, a true story about Polycarp, who was the bishop of Smyrna and was actually martyred for his faith in the Colosseum in Smyrna. He's told to recant of his faith. He refuses to do it. But, Neil, there's this voice from heaven, and it says, "Be strong, Polycarp, play the man." And he does just that. He dies for his faith, but in a powerful way. And I won't share all of the details. Folks can read about it in the book. But, you know, I don't think many of us will be called to die for our faith, but I think we're called to live for our faith. And so I share that story. And then the book really is about how do we play the man? What does that look like?
You know, manhood seems to be, well, maybe in question. Maybe that's the best way we can put it today, or is definitely being defined differently probably in today's generation. Talk about the timeliness of this. How does that impact becoming the man God created us to be?
Well, you know, Neil, I think different cultures at different times in history have defined manhood in different ways. And so I think what we have to do is get past some of the cultural constructs, if you will, and get back to the biblical ideal. And that is the person of Jesus. He's not just the Son of God. He is the Son of Man. And the way I like to say it is when the compass needle of masculinity is spinning, Jesus is true north. And so when I talk about the 7 virtues of manhood, Jesus really sets the standard, sets the example for each one of those. And so the bottom line is this: God made us male and female. And so I think it's something that we need to celebrate, and it's something that we need to cultivate. I believe God hasn't just called us to be men. He's called us to be men of God, and that's really the heartbeat behind the book.
Well, you mentioned the 7 virtues, and let's just summarize those now. We can dive in a little bit deeper, but talk about those characteristics.
Yeah, well, I start out with tough love, and that might be the toughest one to cultivate. And here's my definition. Tough love is carrying a 300-pound cross 650 yards down the Via Dolorosa for someone else's sin. Listen, a tough guy isn't someone who can blacken an eye or bloody a nose. It's someone who's willing to be nailed to a cross for someone else's sin. And so Jesus sets the example. And then, of course, in Ephesians 5, it says, "Husbands, love your wives How? As Christ loves the church. And so to me, tough love is loving people when they least expect it and least deserve it. And so I start there and then talk about childlike wonder, willpower, raw passion, clear vision, true grit, and then end up with moral courage. And at the end of the day, it takes, I think, quite a bit of courage to exercise all of those virtues. And listen, all of us are works in progress. That list might sound a little overwhelming out of the gate, but I think we take it one at a time. And over time, you know, the image of Christ is cultivated within us until, of course, we reflect who he is and his heart for the world.
You know, interesting that the book is not only about becoming the man you created, God created you to be, but you also talk about passing this along. And is this something that we need to be intentional about it? And you give personal examples, of course, of helping both your two boys work through this as well.
Yeah, you know, truth be told, that's really why I wrote this book. And I'll give you an example. A few months ago, I'm in a room with about 500 guys. And I asked them, how many of you were intentionally discipled by your dad? And three hands went up out of 500. And so what we have are fathers who don't really know how to be spiritual fathers. And you know, if you weren't discipled by your dad, then it can be difficult to know how to give that gift to your son. And so what I share in the book is about the year of discipleship, a discipleship covenant, a rite of passage. And we can dive into some of those if you want to. But, you know, just the way that I tried to do my very best to disciple my kids. And here's a thought, Neil. Listen, I love youth pastors. You know, I pastor a church, and I love our youth pastor. But it's not their job to disciple my kids. That's my job as their father. And I'm grateful for the tag team. I'll take all the help I can get. But at the end of the day, I believe it's my responsibility. And one of my dreams, Neil, is to help a million dads disciple their sons. And of course, I share some of that template in the book, and I think it's going to help a lot of fathers at least get into the starting block and see a track ahead of them and know how to run and how to do this.
Before we circle back and kind of dive into some of those seven virtues of manhood, you mentioned rite of passage, and there was a word there. I always love reading your books, Mark, because I learn new words. And the one that you talk about is liminality. Say more about that.
Yeah, it's this idea that it's threshold experiences. And you know, one example is standing at an altar for those who have been married. You know, one moment you're single and the next moment you're married. It's one of those threshold moments. And what I talk about is the way in so many different cultures there are threshold moments where boys become men. And but in our culture, it seems like that has been lost. You know, we kind of substitute getting a driver's license at 16 or even the legal drinking age at 21. And I think we've got to do better than that. We need to be more intentional. And I think we've got to have a game plan to help boys become men. And of course, then men become men of God. And so that's where this covenant and rite of passage come into play. And, you know, it's not unlike the bar mitzvah that the Jewish people would practice. I think we need something like that. And of course, I share some of those examples in the book.
Well, let's dive in. We're talking with Mark Batterson about his new book, Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. And you draw some insights from some amazing men from a generation or two ago and names that we probably know of but don't know enough about, like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and John Wesley Powell and John Muir. You know, each of those guys seem to really love the outdoors. Is that significant, do you think, in this process of manhood?
Well, you know, I think it is, Neil, and I want to be careful here because listen, I probably prefer a cabin to a tent. Just putting that out there. But at the same time, you know, I see Jesus going off the grid for 40 days and going into the wilderness, the wildness. I think it's where you get in touch with yourself, and it's where you get in touch with God. And the reality is, if you look at the Gospels, really what it is Jesus taking these disciples on a 3-year camping trip. I mean, he even said, you know, the birds of the air have nests, but I'm not sure where we're going to sleep tonight. They went camping and fishing and hiking, and there was a certain wildness. And I think it's interesting that John Muir, who I write about in the book, talks about a third baptism, this baptism into manhood. And he advocated for the wilderness. And so that's part of what I've done with the rite of passage with my sons. I think there is something to it. And my guess is that probably resonates with listeners that, listen, I love the conveniences and luxuries of the first world. I love air conditioning, but I think at times we've got to get out into the wild to really get back in touch with who we are.
You know, one of the virtues, the characteristics you talk about is wonder. You know, why is that an important characteristic?
Well, yeah, let me paint the picture this way. You know, Jesus said, unless you become like a little child, you can't even enter the kingdom of heaven. And so in my mind, I think childlikeness is right next to Christlikeness. In fact, I think they're synonymous in many ways. Now, the catch is that Paul also says in 1 Corinthians 13 to put childish ways behind us. So, you know, we all know some men who are really just boys in bigger bodies. And so what we've got to do is find a way to put childish ways behind us, but then to grow in childlikeness. And I think at the heart of that is this idea of childlike wonder. And of course, I share quite a bit about Teddy Roosevelt in that chapter. And I think he sets a wonderful example. And I think it's part of being a man. And by the way, I think one of the gifts that of being a parent is that when you have children, it's not just about teaching them or discipling them. We have to be re-discipled in the ways of childhood sometimes. And so I think one of the joys of being a parent is that you get to relive some of that childhood again. And it may be that parents aren't just gifts to children, but children are really gifts to parents in that regard.
We're talking about Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. That's the subtitle of Mark Batterson's new book, Play the Man. Mark serves as lead pastor of National Community Church. It's one church with 8 campuses in Washington, D.C., and he's best-selling author, and he's with us today on Connecting Faith. And we're going to continue talking about some of these important virtues of the Christ-likeness in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've got Mark Batterson with us today. Mark serves as lead pastor of National Community Church. It's one church with 8 campuses in Washington, D.C. He's a best-selling author of some 16 books, including The Circle Maker, Chase the Lion, In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. Maybe I hope you read at least some of his great books. And the latest is certainly challenging and inspiring. It's called Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. And we're working through some of the 7 virtues or characteristics of manhood. One of them that you talk about is true grit. You know, it sounds like more of a John Wayne movie. How is that a godly characteristic?
I love it. I think when I read Hebrews and it talks about Jesus enduring the cross for the joy that was set before him, you want to talk about grit. Talk about someone who's willing to go to the cross for someone else. And I think this is a dimension that is often overlooked. But I love, Neil, the way that the old Welsh preacher named John Thomas put it. He said, you supply the grit, and God will supply the grace. And so I kind of live by this maxim that you pray like it depends on God and you work like it depends on you. And I think that's where grit comes into play. And listen, anybody who's been married for any length of time knows that it takes some grit to grow a marriage. And parents know it takes some grit in the middle of the night to do the right thing. And so I think this is one dimension of manhood that really plays itself out in an interesting way, and I don't want to ruin the whole story, and folks can read it in the book, but I love this old boxer. He was the heavyweight champion of the world, James Gentleman Corbett, and he had this little motto, fight one more round. And the way he said it, when your arms are so tired that you can hardly lift your hands to come on guard, fight one more round. Neil, I think grit is fighting one more round, and I think that's what we're called to do as men, as husbands, as fathers. Sometimes it's getting knocked down, but it's getting back up, and it's fighting one more round for our marriages, for our children.
Well, it seems closely related to that is willpower, one of the virtues you talk about as well. And of course, you know, I think we're in a culture now where, and certainly as Christians, we know that, you know, willpower alone isn't going to sort of keep us, you know, from sin and temptation, but it's certainly going to go a long way toward that.
Yeah, and I think the key here is that willpower, as it's described in the New Testament, isn't something that we produce on our own. It's something that God does in us and through us. And so there are actually two words for power in the New Testament. One is dunamis, and it's the power to do things beyond your ability. And, you know, that would be evident, for example, in the miracles that Jesus did. But then there's this second kind of power, and it's exousia. And it's the power to not do something that's within your power to do. And so I think, again, the best example of this is Jesus on the cross. You know, he said that he could call on 12 legions of angels. So he could have, he could have hit the eject button and saved himself. But instead of exercising his dunamis, his power to do that, I believe he exercised his exousia. And that's what kept him nailed to that cross, because he wasn't trying to overthrow Rome. He was trying to overthrow sin and death. And the only way to do that was through the cross. And so I love the dunamis of Jesus, but what really draws me to him is that exousia, the ability to not do what you could do. And I think that's the essence of willpower. And listen, it's probably what every guy wishes they had more of. And the good news, it is available to all of us.
You talk about those Greek words. You also talk about a Hebrew word, the word for subdue. It sounded like a good word we ought to know and apply in our daily lives.
Yeah, it comes right out of Genesis 1, where it says that we are to subdue the earth. And it's this Hebrew word, kibosh. It sounds like a Batman fight word,
it does.
Right? It's a fun word. And the way to picture it is almost a submission move in mixed martial arts. It's this idea of subduing and in a sense, stewarding creation. But I think it goes for everything it basically means to bring under control or to conquer. And the truth is, we are more than conquerors through Christ. And so what's interesting, Neil, is that when we don't exercise this the right way, this word can actually mean to molest. It's a misuse of our power or our strength. And so it's so important as men that we learn to first subdue the sin nature in us so that then we can begin to serve God's purposes. And, of course, I dive pretty deep on that subject matter and reminds me a little bit of the proverb that says, it's better to conquer yourself than conquer a city, to paraphrase. And sometimes that's the hardest thing to conquer, but I believe there are some things in the book that are going to help guys figure out how to do that, not in their own strength, not in their own wisdom, but with God's help.
You know, just thinking how, you know, so many, if you look at all the men's magazines, they're all about increasing our power and our strength, which, you know, valuable, but there's something to be in control of our power and strength too, isn't it? We see evidence of that, you know, power out of control in the world all around us.
Yeah, it's a fine line, isn't it? And that's where we've got to make sure that our lives are submitted to God. And at the end of the day, this idea of submission is one that gets so misconstrued and I think defined sometimes in the wrong way. It the best way to think about it is really a yield sign. A yield sign means you give someone else the right of way. And I think it starts with us submitting ourselves to God, to his plans and purposes. And then, of course, there's a lot in the book of Ephesians about submitting to one another. And if you want a happy, healthy, holy marriage, husbands and wives better figure out that little piece, that submission piece. And that's part of what I believe makes a wonderful marriage and a wonderful relationship.
Talking about some important virtues, characteristics, Christ-likeness, to become the man God created you to be. We're talking Mark Batterson, the book's called Play the Man. And Mark, you talk about courage in the book, and it seems like those sort of show up, that issue shows up throughout all of these virtues. But I appreciate the quote from C.S. Lewis, and I don't know if I have it quite right, but he talked about courage sort of shows itself in the testing of all the other virtues. Say more about that.
Yeah. He said courage is not simply one of the virtues, but the form of every virtue at the testing point. And so if you stop and think about it, you know, it's easy to love someone when they're at their best, when things are going great. It's so easy to love someone, but when things aren't going so great, that's where it takes moral courage. And of course, once again, God sets the example for us while we were still sinners. Christ died for us. So in other words, when we were at our worst, he was at his best. And there you have tough love, you know, loving people when they least expect it and least deserve it. But that takes courage. And it's true of willpower. I think it's true of raw passion and clear vision, two of the other virtues, that it takes some moral courage to exercise all of these different virtues. And so that's why I end with that seventh virtue, because I think it's the key to the other six.
Talking today about becoming the man God created you to be. In a moment, we're going to continue a conversation, because the second half of Mark's book, Play the Man, focuses on that rite of passage. And throughout the book, he really tells the story of how he worked through a year of discipleship with his two boys. And we'll let him share some illustrations and some encouragement along those lines in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we're honored to be able to spend a little time with Mark Batterson today. Mark's a best-selling author. The new book that we're referencing is called Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. Mark has written some 16 books. He serves as lead pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C. It's one church with 8 campuses in the D.C. area. And he has 3 children, 2 boys and a daughter, and over a course of some time spent some time helping to pass some important characteristics along to his sons. And he writes about it and really provides a template for us in the book, Play the Man. You know, I'm wondering, you know, as you work through these virtues with your boys, was there maybe the you know, ones that you struggle with more than others, or as you kind of look back on it?
Well, you know, I think to go back, and this is about 10 years ago, you know, I felt like the clear vision piece was lacking. Let me just be honest. I felt like I had more vision for the church I pastor than the family I was called to lead. And that was both convicting And at the same time, I just decided to do something about it, Neil. And so what I did is I started reading and researching because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss a window of opportunity with my oldest son, first of all. And so I just put together a plan. How can I disciple him? How can I help him go from boyhood to manhood? But it really took that clear vision piece. And then the beautiful thing is, as we walked through that process, I think he began to catch the vision. For example, we didn't have any family values at that point. And this is about 10 years into our marriage. Now, I don't know a business or a church that can make it if it doesn't know what its values are. And I think that goes for families, too. And so we identified humility, generosity, gratitude, and courage as our four family values. And those are kind of our cardinal virtues, if you will. And it's been wonderful to see God begin to cultivate those four values in our family, in our children. And so I think it starts, Neil, with a clear vision of what are we trying to accomplish? Because this stuff doesn't happen by default. It happens by design.
You developed a discipleship covenant with the boys. And as you went through that, you had three kind of key aspects of that? Say a bit more about how you worked through that.
Yeah, you know, I decided that I would include a physical challenge, a mental challenge, and a spiritual challenge. And so the physical challenge is something that just based on me knowing my boys, what would push them? What would stretch them? And so for my oldest son, we decided to do a sprint triathlon together. And I'll tell you what, training for that, when you sweat together, there's something bonding about that. And I will never forget the moment that we crossed that finish line together and we did it together. And so that physical covenant, I think, is a key element. And that might seem less significant to some people, but the Bible says that the body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. And so I believe in taking care of it. And the beautiful thing is sometimes the father's the beneficiary because my son was like a jackrabbit. He had no problem doing the 5K as a part of that triathlon, but his dad had to get in a little bit of shape. And so that was a physical covenant. The mental covenant was we read 12 books together. Now, part of that is because I believe leaders are readers and readers are leaders. And so we chose 12 books, some books that I had written that I assigned to him. But then we did some nonfiction, some fiction books, and it created wonderful conversation. And it began to cultivate that intellectual life in him. And then finally, spiritually, and we did a number of things on that front, from reading the New Testament together to setting life goals, which I believe is an expression of faith. Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain what we do not see. And then we practiced certain spiritual disciplines together. For Lent, we actually fasted television. Imagine a 12-year-old kid fasting television for 40 days. That's pretty significant. And so those three challenges, he signed that covenant, and then the deal was if he met those challenges, then the reward would be a rite of passage trip and a place that both of us would choose together. And of course, I know we'll get into that. But that's the essence of the discipleship covenant. And by the way, I share that in the book, and it's also available on playtheman.com because it's something I just want to put into dad's hands. And of course, they can take it and edit it and adapt it to their sons and hopefully put it into practice in their context.
And as you said, it's not dramatic. The Hallelujah Chorus didn't play when you're, kind of going through it. But it's just an opportunity for dads and their boys to connect. And I know I've heard before that, when it comes to men and boys, that we communicate better when we're doing something together. And I'm sure that was the case for you, right? It didn't have to be a lot of talking, but in the process of being together, there was some modeling taking place.
Yeah, I think that's the key. And, you know, it's not going through a curriculum. I think that's reducing discipleship to something that I'm not sure it was meant to be. Not that there can't be a curriculum, but I think the heart of it is sharing life and sharing experiences. And the big thing for me, Neil, is I wanted to make sure that I could look in the mirror and know that I gave this my best effort. And so I think half of being a dad is just show up. Just show up. And, you know, I talk about some of the father-son meetings that you referenced. And it's true. It's not like there was a hallelujah chorus or angels singing. You know, some of them I felt like, did that really make a difference? But it's showing up that I think is half the battle.
And you did this when the boys were at about 12, right?
Yeah, you know, I decided to initiate on their 12th birthdays, and then the rite of passage happened on their 13th birthday. But let me just say this, you know, kids mature at different rates, and so I think you can do it later than that. I'm not sure I would do it much earlier than that. But and let me just say a word to those who maybe feel like their kids are already growing. Well, first of all, you never stop being a parent. And I think God gives us a second chance. It's called being a grandparent. So I just don't want anybody to be listening and feeling this twinge of regret, like it's too late or it's too little. I don't believe that. I believe that where we fall short, that God can make up the difference, first of all, because he's our Heavenly Father. And secondly, listen, it's not too late to put a little more effort, a little more intentionality into it now, even if your children are older. And so be encouraged. It's not too late.
You did, I know you did a Grand Canyon trip. You did, went out to what, the Alcatraz, is that what it was, or the San Francisco Bay with your daughter? I mean, we should maybe say a word about daughters too. That this was you can have a meaningful discipleship experience with your daughters too, right?
Absolutely, and I think it's so critical that father-daughter relationship is absolutely essential. And my wife did some of the more formal elements. I won't deep dive on that. I share about that in the book, but I wanted to do a little bit of a challenge with my daughter. And so we trained for the Escape from Alcatraz, which is a swim from Alcatraz Island in San Francisco to the shore. And now the crazy thing is we were on the boat about ready to jump in, and it was canceled because of fog, believe it or not. But the day is going to come that we get back out there and actually conquer that one again. But what a wonderful experience, even just preparing for it with my daughter. And so, again, it's about those shared experiences. I don't think you have to go a long ways from home. I don't think it has to cost a lot of money. It's just about intentionality and setting up some of those experiences. That can just create memories that, of course, we and our children will have forever.
Talk about maybe the feedback, the reaction you've gotten after you spent a year being intentional in developing a relationship, that discipleship covenant, as you call it, with your boys. You know, they got that something special to do at the end of that. What kind of reaction did they have as a result of that?
Yeah, you know, I think any parent of normal children knows that you don't really expect your teenage kids to say, "Dad, you're the greatest dad in the world." Well, maybe on Father's Day.
Yeah, maybe.
But you know, it's not like they were. They don't know anything else.
Sure.
So you know, who knows whether they expected that or not? But one of the things we did for their rite of passage celebration is actually write letters. Myself and some of their uncles and grandfather here's what I believe. Those are like time capsules, Neil. And, you know, I think they may actually get more meaningful in 5 or 10 or 20 years or maybe when they have their own children. And so I don't think what you do – I don't think you do this for the moment. Now, certainly there are benefits that happen, you know, right away. But I think this is about laying a foundation for their life and knowing that they'll probably actually appreciate it even more with the passage of time. And so it was a wonderful experience. And the rite of passage trips we took were absolutely epic. In fact, if we have time, maybe I can tell you about one of them. I think it's about laying the foundation for their future.
Let's take a quick break and come back, and Mark Batterson tells about an epic trip. And whatever he has to say, we want to hear about it. We're also going to circle back to an important verse in 1 Corinthians 16, just to reflect on that a bit, too. It's all coming up in the moments ahead. We're talking with Mark Batterson, lead pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C., and best-selling author, talking about his new book, Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We have a few more minutes to connect with Mark Batterson, who's lead pastor of National Community Church. You know him as a best-selling author, written wonderful books, including The Circle Maker, In the Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day, Grave Robber, All In, If. The latest we're talking about is Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. And we've been going through some of the important virtues, characteristics of what it means to be a man and to grow in the likeness of Christ. And Mark, we were talking a little bit about the discipleship covenant, the rite of passage. And tell us a little bit about the trip.
Yeah, well, once my sons fulfilled their part of the covenant, the physical challenge, mental challenge, spiritual challenge, we decided to celebrate with a rite of passage. And so with my oldest son, we actually hiked the Grand Canyon rim to rim. Mm. And I made the mistake, Neil, of doing it in July when the temperatures were 110 degrees in the shade. I lost 13 pounds in 2 days from rim to rim. But I tell you what an epic challenge and adventure. And no one can take that away from my son and I. It's one of those shared memories that we will treasure forever. And so then with my youngest son, we did something a little bit different. And I think one of the things people will like in Play the Man are some of the stories that I share. One of my favorites is about John Wesley Powell. And I bet a lot of people don't even know that name. And so I'll let them read about him. He's the first person to traverse the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon, ran 500 rapids, and did it with one arm. He lost an arm in the Civil War. But I wanted to kind of recreate that in a sense, Neil. And so with my youngest son, we did a five-day rafting trip. And my favorite moment was one of the rapids at mile marker 79.1. It's called Sockdolager, and it's one of the biggest rapids. And so we're in this raft, and we see this rapid, and I'll be honest, I'm a little nervous because I know that the only way for me to go home is to come home with my son. So we've got to survive this rapid, and we're white-knuckling the raft. And we hit this wall of water that's just like and the water's like 49 degrees in the Colorado River, so it's like a punch in the face. And as we're going through the rapid, my 12-year-old son yells at the top of his voice, "We are men! We are men!" And it was just this moment where I felt like, oh, man, the plan just came together. You know, it was this moment where he really felt like he was stepping into manhood. And again, you can't script that, but you can set up those kind of moments just by being intentional, by putting together a little plan, and then you let it unfold and see what happens. And so we rafted the river, then we hiked out of the Grand Canyon, and when everything was said and done, I tell you what, we shared a bond that we didn't before that rite of passage.
I was just thinking how I think so often Christianity has sort of missed a part of the gospel message about not letting men live out their God-given character. I mean, I think we all want those kinds of experiences, men, don't we?
I think we all do. And here's the deal. If we don't use our testosterone the right way, we generally use it the wrong way. And so I think what we need to do is, for starters, I think we need a vision that's bigger and better than whatever temptation we face. And then I think we've got to learn to just live this out in a way that is stretching ourselves. One of the things I talk about is just doing hard things. I think that's part of being a man, and that's part of how we continue to grow. And I think that's part of what that rite of passage is about.
I've got a picture of my office wall with the reference. It's a Western scene, you know, near the Grand Canyon probably, but it's 1 Corinthians 16:13. Talk about that, the wonderful verse, and how that we can apply that today.
Yeah, it's such a powerful verse. Stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men. I kind of like that translation. Mm. Quit you like men. Be strong. I think it means we don't quit, we don't give up, and I think that the word there for quit you like men is probably the closest translation to play the man. Let's not just be men, let's be men of God, let's not just be fathers, let's be spiritual fathers. Stand fast, quit you like men, be strong.
I like it. Mark, maybe just a final thought about what's your advice for how to get started? Whether our kids are little or if we're in the grandchildren stage, is there a way to start? What would you recommend?
Yeah, I would suggest starting where I started. Once I felt like, hey, I need more vision, I need to be more proactive, I need some kind of plan, I think what you do is you start reading and researching. And for me, it was a couple of books. Let me throw out some kudos to John Eldridge, Wild at Heart. What a great book. And then a book called Raising Modern Day Knights. Those books inspired me a decade ago, and that's why I wrote Play the Man. I think it's just a starting point. Begin to read and research. And my hope is that by sharing some of my story, people can take that. It's going to give them some ideas, and then figure out how to implement a plan with their family, for their marriage, for their children. And so I'm hoping and praying that as people replay the man, that it will give them some ideas. And then you got to take the initiative and work the plan.
You want to find out about developing maybe a discipleship covenant with your kids? You can find that and more information about the book as well. PlayTheMan.com. The book is called Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. Mark Batterson, the best-selling author of The Circle Maker and a number of others, talking with us today about his latest book, Play the Man. Blessings to you, Mark, at National Community Church and the ongoing speaking and writing that you do. We're honored to spend some time with you today.
Hey, Neil, absolute joy and privilege. Thanks so much, and God bless.
We have a few minutes left on today's program, and after a stimulating conversation with Mark Batterson about becoming the man God created you to be, wanted to focus a bit more on men and just bring another perspective from Stephen Mansfield. Stephen Mansfield is a best-selling author. He's a popular speaker, coaches leaders worldwide, and he's written a lot about presidents. But not long ago, he came out with a book called Mansfield's Book of Manly Men, an utterly invigorating guide to being your most masculine self. And it seemed appropriate that we're talking about men. We'd get Stephen Mansfield's take on some key principles to manhood. Here he is.
Well, I'm a big believer in these four principles, and they're a little bit different from the traditional man teaching, so to speak, that we see in the church. First of all, the first principle is, and we humorously call these Mansfield's manly maxims, but the first one is manly men do manly things. I say it this way to make a little bit of a break from the earlier men's movement, which was wonderful, but focused a lot on the inner life and the emotions and the healing of the masculine soul. When I'm on the campuses and I'm talking to young men, they say, look, I know we're all messed up, but just tell me what to do. So in this book, I spend time telling men, exactly what does manhood look like? What are the responsibilities, the duties? Second of all, the second manly prep maxim is manly men tend their field. I believe, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians, that there's a field assigned to each of us, that there's a body of responsibilities, the words in Greek are metron, really metron of grace. We get the word meter from it. It's an actual kind of a measured space that we are responsible for. It's, you know, if in most men's cases, it's a family and a job and a house and whatever other property, whatever other responsibilities he's given. That's his field. He's got to tend it well. He doesn't surrender that to his wife and say, hey, you take care of the kids. He doesn't surrender financial responsibility. He's the one who's tending his field, from the souls of his children to the care for the house, to the direction of the family, to the financial well-being. That's his field, and manly men tend their field. The third one is manly men make manly men. I'm all for books, seminars, movies, but the bottom line is, in every church and every company and all throughout our culture, we need a culture of men who are encouraging each other to be righteous and godly men, and are also defending and protecting and welcoming the young. There's an African proverb that says, if we don't initiate the boys, they will burn the village down. And we're seeing that in our society. We're raising up young barbarians, and what we need are righteous men who are taking boys into their lives and mentoring them and teaching them and initiating them and helping them to become great men. And there's so many things we could talk about how boys are under, and boyhood itself is under attack these days. And then finally, manly men live to the glory of God. I teach men all over the country and the world, really, that you really can't do what you're called to do as a man if you don't live for the applause of heaven, if you don't have the resources of God, the wisdom, the insight, the patience, and if you are simply living for some kind of fulfillment here on earth. A man's called to do such exceptional things that he really does need to have his gaze turned to the Lord and also rely on the resources of the Lord to fulfill that manly mandate, so to speak. So those are the four maxims that we build on in the book.
Best-selling author and popular speaker Stephen Mansfield has written widely about leadership, the lessons of history, and the currents of contemporary culture. And he writes frequently about the presidents. And in light of 4th of July tomorrow and our conversation on President George Washington, here's a final thought from Stephen Mansfield.
Every day will bring a fight. Every day will bring a battle. It will bring hardship. But each of those hardships is an opportunity to change the institution that you're leading and make history. It all depends on how you react to it. A cowardly approach says, you know, I want a rose garden. I want something. I want a quiet place to sit and be left alone and have the world go by. Well, then don't run for public office. But if you're going to run for public office, you better, you know, in the image of my favorite movie, Braveheart, you better strap on your kilt, paint your face blue, and get ready to charge the enemies of your age, you know, because it's not a peaceful calling. Some men want to escape responsibility and duty. Other men run to it. And the greatest of American presidents were not people who happened into it accidentally or, you know, just by political party machinery, but they aspire to. I think great men want to have the responsibility. It's like the player on the basketball court who wants the ball. He's not hiding from it. He's not passing it off. Give me the ball. I'll make the play. And it can be some ego. It can be some bravado. But I think when men have been through what many of our great presidents had been before they ever got to the Oval Office, they know who they are. They've looked around. They've seen other men, and they know they have something to offer, and they want to offer it to the nation. And I think if that's really pure and God-ordained, then it's what makes great heroes.
The reflections of Stephen Mansfield as we talked about his book, Mansfield's Book of Manly Men. Stephen is a popular author and speaker who coaches leaders worldwide and writes frequently about leadership, lessons in history, and particularly is interested in our presidents. And we're going to focus on our first president on tomorrow's program here on Connecting Faith, and highlight an interview from Nathaniel Philbrick, who wrote about George Washington, Benedict Arnold, and the fate of the American Revolution. We'll learn about valiant ambition on tomorrow's Connecting Faith. I want to encourage you to find time to listen. If you can't listen live, check it out online. You can find the podcast of our interviews anytime. They're easily shareable. Go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith, and have a wonderful 4th of July.